Chapter 58. At first there was complete confusion, with much shouting and wild shooting. The Egyptians had no idea of the size of the force that fired on them in the dining hall during the passage of the train. They snuffed the lights and shot at the early morning shadows until they realized the shadows weren't shooting back. The dirt roads between the wooden buildings took on an eerie silence. For several minutes, the Egyptian hijackers made no effort to leave the dining hall. Then, suddenly, a half-dozen men, two from the front and four at the rear of the building, broke from the doors, scrambling, crouching, and diving headlong behind predetermined shelter. Once in position, they laid down a circle of fire to cover the rest of the men, who then followed on their heels. Their leader, a tall man wearing a black turban, directed the men's movements by blowing sharp bleeps on a whistle. After a rocky start, the Egyptian terrorist team was everything Pitt was afraid of. Highly trained, practiced, and tough. When it came to house street fighting, they were the best in the world. They were even well led. The leader in the black turban was competent and methodical. They searched building by building, working toward the crushing mill until they half-circled it like a crescent. No haphazard assault by Amar's hand-picked killers. They moved with stealth and purpose. Their leader called out in Arabic. When there was no reply, another terrorist shouted from a different location. They were hailing the guard and mechanics inside the crushing mill, Pitt guessed correctly. They were too close now for Pitt to risk revealing himself at the window. He removed the terrorist's ski mask and clothing and threw it in a pile on the floor, then rummaged through a pocket of his ski jacket and retrieved a small mirror attached to a narrow stretch handle. He eased the mirror above the windowsill and extended the handle, twisting it like a periscope. He found the target he was looking for, 90% concealed, but enough showing for a killing shot. Pitt turned the fire select lever from full auto to single. Then he swiftly raised up, aimed, and squeezed the trigger. The deadly old Thompson spat. Black Turban took two or three steps, his face blank and uncomprehending. Then he sagged, fell forward, and pitched to the ground. Pitt dropped down, lowered his gun, and peered into the mirror again. The terrorists had disappeared. To a man, they had dodged behind buildings or crawled furiously under abandoned and rusting mining equipment. Pitt knew they weren't about to quit. They were still out there, dangerous as ever, waiting for instructions from their second in command. Gunn took his cue and pumped a 10-round burst through a thin wooden door on a shed across the road. Very slowly the door swung open, pushed by a body that twisted and dropped. Still, there was no return fire. They were nobody's fools, thought Pitt. Now that the Arabs realized they were not up against a superior force, but harried by a small group, they took their time to regroup and consider options. They also realized now that their unknown assailants had captured their helicopter and were holed up in the crushing mill. Pitt ducked, scurried over, and crouched beside Gunn. How's it look on your side?
Quiet. They're playing it nice and easy. They don't want to dent their helicopter.
I think they're going to create a diversion at the front door and then make a rush through the side office.
Gunn nodded.
Sounds logical. About time we found better cover away from these windows anyway. Where do you want me?
Pitt looked up at the catwalks above. He pointed out a row of small skylights encircling a small winch tower.
Climb up and keep watch.
Yell when they launch the attack and welcome them with a concentrated burst through the front door. Then get your ass back down here. They won't have any scruples about peppering the walls above the copter.
On my way.
Pitt moved around to the side office, paused at the threshold, and turned to Giordino and Findlay.
How's it coming? He asked.
Giordino looked up from shoveling a pile of leftover ore for a barricade.
Fort Giordino will be finished on schedule.
Findlay stopped work and stared at him.
If before G, Fort Findlay.
Giordino looked at Findlay morosely for a second before returning to his work.
Fort Findlay if we lose, Giordino if we win.
Shaking his head in awe, Pitt wondered why he was blessed with such incredible friends. He wanted to say something to them, express his feelings of gratitude for risking their lives to stop a band of scum when they could have bolted for the boondocks and hid out until Hollis and his team arrived. But they knew. Men like this needed no words of appreciation or encouragement. There they'd stay, and there they'd fight it out. Pitt hoped to God none would die uselessly.
Argue about it later, he ordered, and ready a reception committee if they get past me.
He turned and entered the damp and musty-smelling office. He checked his Thompson and set it aside. After quickly building a barrier with two overturned desks, a steel filing cabinet, and a heavy iron pot-bellied stove, he lay down on the floor and waited. He didn't wait long. 1 minute later, he came to unmoving attention as he thought he heard the faint crunch of gravel outside. The sound stopped and then came again, soft but unmistakable. He raised the Thompson and propped the grips on the filing cabinet. Too late, Gunn gave a yell of warning when suddenly an object crashed through the transom window above the door and fell, rolling across the floor. A second came right behind. Pitt dropped low and tried to burrow into the steel cabinet, cursing his lack of forethought. Both grenades went off with an ear-bursting blast. The office erupted in a great roar of shattered furniture and flying wood and yellowed paper. The outer wall was blown outward and most of the ceiling caved in. Pitt was dazed by the concussion and the deafening clap of the twin blast. He'd never experienced an explosion in a close proximity before, and he was stunned right down to his toes. The pot-bellied stove had taken the main force of the shrapnel, yet held its shape, the rounded sides perforated with jagged holes. The file cabinet was bent and twisted and the decks badly mutilated, but the only apparent injuries Pitt could find on himself were a thin but deep cut in his left thigh and a 5-centimeter gash on his cheek. The office had vanished and left in its place a pile of smoldering debris, and for one apprehensive moment, Pitt had a vision of being trapped in a blazing fire. But only for a moment. The rain-soaked old wood of the building sizzled a bit in several places, but refused to ignite. With a conscious effort of will, Pitt switched the Thompson to full auto and aimed the barrel at the splintered remains of the front door. Blood was streaming down the side of his face and under his collar. His eyes never flickered as a barrage of automatic fire came pouring over his head from the guns of four men who charged through the shattered openings in the outer wall. Pitt felt neither remorse nor fear as he fired a long burst that blew away his attackers like trees before a tornado. They threw up their weapons, arms flailing in the manner of frenzied dancers on a stage, and spun crazily to the debris-piled floor. Three more terrorist fighters followed the first wave and were as ruthlessly stopped by Pitt, all except one, who reacted with incredible swiftness and flung himself behind a smoking, shredded leather sofa. Cannon-like blasts went off in Pitt's ear as Findlay dropped to his knees behind him and pumped three loads from his shotgun into the lower base of the sofa. Leather, burlap padding, and wood sprayed the air. A moment of quiet, and then one of the terrorist's arms flopped lifelessly beyond the sofa's carved feet. Giordino appeared through the smoke and gunpowder fumes, grasping Pitt under the arms and dragging him back into the crushing mill area and behind an old ore car. "Must you always make a mess?" he said, grinning. Then his face softened with concern. "You hurt bad?" Pitt wiped the blood away from his cheek and stared down at the crimson stain spreading through the fabric covering his leg. "Damn, a perfectly good pair of ski pants ruined. Now that really pisses me off." Findlay knelt down, cut away the pant's leg, and began bandaging the wound. "You were lucky to survive the blast with only a couple of cuts." "Dumb of me not to figure on grenades," Pitt said bitterly. "I should have guessed." "No sense in blaming yourself," Giordino shrugged. "This isn't our line of work." Pitt looked up. "We better get smart real fast if we want to be around when the SOF guys arrive." "They won't try another assault from this direction," Findlay said. "The blast knocked down the stairway outside. They'd be sitting ducks if they tried scrambling up 10 feet of broken timber. Now might be a ripe opportunity to burn the helicopter and get the hell out of here." "The news gets worse and it gets better," Gunn said, dropping from a ladder to the floor. "I saw another 20 of them charging up the railroad track like a prairie fire. They should be here in another 7 or 8 minutes. Giordino looked at Gunn suspiciously. "How many?" "I stopped counting at 15. "The opportunity to flee the coop gets even riper," muttered Findlay. "Hollis and his men?" Gunn shook his head wearily. "No sign of them." He paused to draw a deep breath and turned to stare at Pitt. "The terrorist reinforcements, they were trailed by 4 hostages with 2 guards. I could just recognize them through my binoculars. One was your dad. He and a woman were helping 2 other men along the tracks." "Hala Camille, bless her," Pitt said with vast relief. "Thank God the old man is alive." "The other two?" asked Giordino. "Most likely Presidents Hassan and De Lorenzo.
So much for early retirement, said Findlay gloomily as he placed the final piece of tape over Pitt's bandage. The terrorists are only keeping the senator and the others alive to ensure a safe escape, said Pitt. And won't hesitate to murder them one by one until we hand over their helicopter, predicted Gunn. Pitt nodded. Without a doubt. But if we surrendered, there's no guarantee they wouldn't murder them anyway. They've already tried to assassinate Hala twice, and most certainly want Hassan dead, too. They'll call a truce and negotiate. Pitt looked at his watch. They won't haggle for very long. They know their time is running out. But we might gain a few extra minutes. So what's the plan? Asked Giordino. We stall and fight for as long as it takes. Pitt looked at Gunn. Were the hostages surrounded by the hijackers? No, they were a good 200 meters in the rear, trailing the main party up the rail bed, Gunn replied. They were herded by only 2 terrorists. He stared back into Pitt's green eyes and then nodded in slow understanding. You want me to take out the guards and protect the senator and the rest until Hollis shows? You're the smallest and the fastest, Rudy. If anybody can get clear of the building undetected and circle around behind those 2 guards while we distract them, you can. Gunn threw out his hands and dropped them to his sides. I'm grateful for the trust. I only hope I can pull it off. You can. That leaves only 3 of you to hold the fort. We'll have to make do. Pitt awkwardly rose to his feet and limped over to the pile of terrorists' clothing he'd tossed on the floor. He returned and held it out to Gunn. Wear this. They'll think you're one of them. Gunn stood there rooted, reluctant to desert his friends. Giordino came to his rescue by laying a beefy hand on the smaller man's shoulder and steering him to a maintenance passage that dropped beneath the floor and ran around the giant crushing mill. You can get out through here, he said, smiling. Wait until things heat up before you make your break. Gunn found himself half under the floor in the passage before he could protest. He took one last look at Pitt, the incredibly durable, indestructible Dirk Pitt, who gave him a jaunty wave. Peered at Giordino, old, steady, and reliable, whose concern was masked by a light-hearted expression. And finally, Findlay, who flashed a sparkling smile and held up both thumbs. They were all part of him, and he was heartsick at leaving, not knowing if he would see any of them alive again. You guys be here when I get back, he said, you hear? Then he ducked under the flooring and was gone.